You with the boys, eh?
They literally just all left like a bunch of schoolgirls. I don't know, something about trying to go put a tip up out or something. But I'll when they get back in, we'll do a little tour around. It's funny because like I don't have any experience with like these big permanent shacks, like these sleeper houses. Like I just don't. I mean, I filmed out of them and like I've come across them with like buddies and stuff like that. But I don't do this typically. It's just not my. Never was my style of fishing and still really isn't. But when I bought some property for Honeyland and I needed a place to stay and it just made sense. And then this is like the second time it's ever actually been on ice before. So it's all new, but like kind of a good little system going on. We're learning and we can work from here. And as long as we have internet, like a hotspot, like we're doing now, it works great. And it's been awesome.
Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. We have another exciting episode for you guys. This one's coming from Minnesota. He's a fantastic angler, and obviously he's an amazing media production wizard. But before we jump into exactly who it is, I got my co-host Logan here. And we've been on the ice. How you been, Logan? I know you had a pretty good catch last weekend.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty good. It's been nice. I've got a little injury, so I haven't been drilling any holes. So I kind of just
separated shoulder.
Yeah, so I kind of just get to show up right now, and I'll drive there whatever, but I don't have to worry about drilling the holes, and I get to fish. So it's been a nice change. But yeah, no, we got to, I guess we were both at Diefenbaker this previous weekend. So no, it's been good. Things started seem to be heating up there a little bit. I know we were still, I guess when we were there, it was still January. Right at the end of January, so a little bit more time and things should be full swing. But no, it was good. How about yourself?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, we weren't fishing together, but we were both on Deef doing a little bit of burbot fishing. I mean, my situation was a little different. I was in a luxury ice house, which was pretty freaking awesome. First night camping on the ice this season, and it was pretty great. So was able to get a couple burbs. Nothing over 30, which is the Saskatchewan Master Angler size. I think I had a 28 and a 26. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, like first time targeting burbot this season. And, coming into the later part of February and into March, those burbot are going to turn on. So, and they're going to be big, like they're going to have bellies on them too. So, it was good. It was awesome. Tons of fun. The ice house was awesome. Ryan over at Outdoor Seasons. Has a beautiful ice house for rent and really great rates. So thank you to him for putting us up, and the hospitality was awesome. So yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, you got a Master Angler though. Yeah, what was that, 34 inches?
Yeah, I think
no
so.
Big deal.
I was going to say, I forgot to even mention that. It's just, I guess we're lucky here, right, with the burbot that Diefenbaker has. And Last Mountain, I don't know about as long, but they definitely get pretty, pretty fat out there. But we managed... before the sun went down, there was four burbot caught. We kind of went there like mid-afternoon and stayed till like 11 at night. And before the sun went down, we probably, I think it was four or five burbot caught between us. And there's two, mine was 34. I think my buddy's was 34, maybe 35. It's hard to get a good measurement, as I'm sure you know. If anyone's...
Because they're just curling up.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just so strong. It's all muscle there. So kind of hard to get a good measurement, but yeah, roughly 34, the next one 35, and then I think there's another one. It might have been, if it wasn't 30, it was damn near there. And that was another guy we were out there with. So no, it was good. But as soon as that sun went down, it's like the nursery moved in, and there was one that was probably over 20 inches and the rest were all below it. So
yeah,
we caught more. I think we ended with like 15 or 20 or something. But it was weird. As soon as that sun went down, we thought it was going to heat up, and it did, just not with the size whatsoever.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it is what it is. At least you were catching. I mean, those two burbs that I caught, it was myself and Big Brandon out there, and between the two of us only caught those two burbot. But I guess being in that luxury ice house, you're not super mobile. So where it was planted, that's where we stayed. Like, we didn't have a whole lot of options, right? So for us, we just kind of had to wait around, sit, listen to some music, and cook up some food in the kitchen and wait for the fish to move in. So it was pretty cool. Like, I mean, Big Brandon had one bite a lure off. Mm-hmm. And then like a half an hour later, I caught the 28-inch burbot, and that had the hook that Brandon broke off.
So did you get to keep it? It was like,
oh, well, yeah, because it was mine. he broke off on my rod because I like stepped out. Okay. So, yeah. So, but it was super cool. I mean, I made a little YouTube video out of it. So if you haven't checked that, you can find that on my Amped Up Angling channel. But I have a photo, and there's just two lures, both hooked on either side of the mouth. And it's super cool. And like, I've heard that happening before. I've never had that happen to me before. But the stories I've heard, like, it's usually, you know, you break one off, you got a dead stick or another person's fishing beside you, and it just kind of swims over to the other lure and, you know, right away, you know, bites that other lure. But this was like a good 25, 30 minutes later. So it was super cool. I thought it was unique that this fish was lingering around for that long.
Yeah, I think that's something that we could probably put up as a debate for the listeners. If I know your situation is a bit different, but if you're fishing with your buddy and he gets snapped off and then you catch that fish,
who has the
rights to it? Is it the original owner or is it you? Because he would have never got it back if it wasn't for you. What do you think?
That's fair. I agree. I agree with that statement that whoever catches the fish should be able to keep both lures.
Okay.
Which in this case, the lures were both mine anyways.
True.
And I got the fish. So technically, I think Big Brandon should buy me two more lures.
I was going to say, he might owe you one because he lost you one and you had to go and work harder to catch it back.
I had to go work for it. So, but yeah, nonetheless, super cool. Diefenbaker, I think, is just going to light up for burbot fishing. And I've been seeing so many people asking questions like on Facebook groups about burbot fishing. Like, obviously, I say this all the time, like, it's one of the most underrated game fish to target. And it's been kind of neat seeing people more interested in kind of how they can catch burbot when in, you know, years prior, it's like, oh, I don't want to catch burbot. How do I target walleye? I don't want to catch these burbot. I don't, like, why am I catching burbot? And now these people actually want to actually target these fish because they're so fun. Yeah. And they're actually a fantastic eating fish. And that was something my mom didn't know. I was talking to her this weekend. And showed her the pictures of these burbot or eel pout, ling, freshwater cod, dogfish, whatever you want to call them. And she's like, oh, those are gross. Like, why you throw it back? I was like, yeah, but like, we could have ate it. Like, they're fantastic eating. Like, mm-hmm. They're the, you know, poor man's lobster, the true poor man's lobster. I mean, you can make some poor man's lobster out of
pike
walleye if you want. Yeah. Pike, yeah. But they say burbot is the true poor man lobster.
Yeah, well, the freshwater cod, I think, just with the consistency of it, right? Kind of the same idea there. But that is a big thing. Like, I know at Buffalo, Dad would talk about in years past when I've been wanting to catch one and hadn't really learned how to get on the bite yet. He said that a long time ago, it always seemed to be you'd always find him on the ice. Guys would just leave him on the ice, right? That was a while ago. But then the numbers in Buff are pretty low. And I was lucky enough to catch my very first burbot on Buffalo. So I was happy that my first ever one was on Buffalo Pound, kind of the home lake there. But after that, like I was talking to some buddies last weekend, and we've had our camera for probably, I want to say, like 7-8 years, and tons of hours on that lake with the camera. And we've seen a burbot on camera once. And then the one I caught, I was on my flasher, so I didn't see it. So like, that kind of goes to show, I guess, the lack of them that are in there. But anyways, back to the original point of, it's kind of become a lot more popular, like you said, in the last couple of years, right? It used to be a nuisance fish kind of thing, or people are grossed out about it. And now people are purposely targeting them, and their numbers seem to be coming back pretty good. I know that I heard that there used to be some kind of burbot derby at Deef a while ago, and just like stories of like box fulls of trucks or truck boxes full, like leaving with burbot and stuff, just tons of them, right? Yeah. And I mean, their limit's still pretty high. There's obviously good numbers in Deef, but crazy stories of the past, I guess. You wouldn't really see that anymore, but it's good to see that people enjoy my favorite species.
Oh, honey pea. And well, I mean, speaking of ice fishing derbies, this is a pretty cool fact. I mean, down in Minnesota on Gull Lake, they had, I believe it was called the Brainerd Jaycees $150,000 ice fishing extravaganza. Supposedly the largest ice fishing derby in the world. And for those of you that don't follow Brett McCombs and Target Walleye, he made a YouTube video and some posts about it. And it's pretty unbelievable. They actually drilled 16,000 to 20,000 holes for this derby with StrikeMaster 40-volt electric augers solely.
Yeah, no gas.
Nothing but. 16 to 20,000 holes.
Probably on a volunteer basis, too.
That's unbelievable. I think, well, what we were doing the math, and let's say, because he said 16 to 20, let's go 18,000 holes in between there. And how many volunteers do you think they had?
I would hope at least 100 and some, because if it's only like 30 something.
150 volunteers to drill holes.
Yeah.
That's still 120 holes a person.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's technically based on, I was looking at the augers today, and I'm assuming they're 8-inch holes.
I would assume so.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that they're probably less ice than us, but they're probably around that 2-foot range, right?
Yeah. Give or take. I mean, I think when you look at the StrikeMaster website, like how many holes they can drill in one charge is based off of 16 inches of ice. Yeah. So, I mean, if they had 24 inches of ice, it's, you know,
a little bit more, but they say like 120 or something, right? With the 8-inch. I guess the eight inch with the light flight.
Yeah. But. Which I got and is freaking awesome. I got the new Pro Light and it's got the new six amp battery. So StrikeMaster came out with a new battery, 6 amps, and it also has a USB plug, which is awesome. So like I used it for the camping trip as like a battery pack for my phone and stuff. So yeah, it was awesome. And then the light flight, I think it shaves like 4 or 5 pounds off.
Is it noticeable?
Fairly, yeah. Like walking around, like especially obviously without the motor head on it, like just holding the flighting.
Yeah.
Like it's like holding a piece of cardboard. Like it's so light.
Yeah. Well, and you can even go into, is it the 24 and get a lighter head?
Yeah. You can go the 24 volt. And honestly, like, I mean, I didn't want to go that route just because we get so much ice up here.
Yeah.
But I was talking to Ben, I forget his last name, but he has the 24 volt and he's been using it the last season and a half, last season and this season. And he's said he hasn't had any issues at all with the 24 volt head, 24 volt head.
Well, yeah, that's good.
And it's a lot cheaper than the 40 volt head. So if you're looking for an electric ice auger, you can grab the 24 volt with the light flight and you're looking at barely carrying anything.
Yeah. I think, and that's like 200, 250 bucks cheaper or something, I think.
Yeah. It's really not that. I think I saw Cabela's had them on sale for like $4.99 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that today as well. So that'd be a good pickup.
And yeah, you go to a 40 volt and you're looking at like $7.50, right? So
yeah.
Anyways, I just thought that was such a cool fact that, you know, 16 to 20,000 holes with electric only, that's unbelievable. So, but yeah, I mean, since we talked about it already, if you haven't, download the Saskatchewan Master Angler app, and if you're fishing in Saskatchewan, if you're coming to Saskatchewan, submit your catches. We do have the program now. It's fully functional, and Logan's got a couple master anglers under his belt. I heard a couple other people had some master angler fish over the weekend as well, so definitely go check them out. If you don't have a Sask Wildlife membership, look into it. It goes a long way for really whatever it is, $20, depending on what branch you're going through. So please look into a Sask Wildlife membership if you don't already have one.
Yeah, I do have to admit I dropped the ball. I did not get a picture of the fish on the tape. Kind of just on there quick and back in there, mostly because I couldn't hold it with my with my left arm. I can't lift anything really, so it's kind of hard to do that. But yeah, I dropped the ball there, but I'll eventually get one on photo and be able to actually get my master angler status. Like former guest Ryan Parrott, who I see today just caught like a 44-inch girthy pike. Just massive.
I think it was like, I zoomed in a little bit. I mean, it was kind of blurry when I zoomed in. It looked like it was touching 45.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
It was a fat, long pike. So yeah, shout out to Ryland. That guy catches big fish. But yeah, and then of course, like this, the whole weekend I was out ice camping. My go-to is my blackfish pullover. We talk about it every episode. But if you are looking to get any blackfish gear, head on down to the show notes below for an exclusive 15% off discount. I just seen that they had I posted it up on the story a couple days ago. They had the ladies soft shell pullover. I think it was originally like $120. I think that's US. But it's on sale right now for $79.99. So if you have a woman that loves to fish, I got Brooklyn that for Christmas, I think last year. And yeah, she loves it. So yeah, Definitely go check that out. And of course, $79.99, then you take another 15% off and you're saving yourself a pretty penny.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's the other nice thing about the clothing is it's not only fishing stuff. Like if I go out for supper or something, I'll be wearing some of my Blackfish stuff sometimes. Like it's nice clothing and then also useful. So kind of a two punch combo there, right? Like you can wear it. You don't have to wear it just out on the ice or in the boat. Like it's fashionable.
Heck no.
Yeah.
I just wore it out to get some gas. And honestly, every time I wear it out, I get somebody's like, "Oh, what is that? Like that looks pretty soft." Cause it's got the fleece in the hood. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everywhere I go, I get comments on the pullover. But yeah, so that's Blackfish gear. Save yourself 15% off. And, here's a quick word from Lucky Bastard Distillers.
There are certain moments in life that really stick with you. This is definitely one of them. The thrill of the dill, my friends, is not a myth. Prohibition is over, Saskatchewan. Ask about LB's legendary Birmingham's Dill Pickle Vodka. After all, it's not a party until someone pulls out the pickle. Tours and tastings available. Call or stop by 814 47th Street East. And tonight, why not mix your Caesar with some Lucky Bastard? It's the one with the pickle in it.
Well, if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can check the show notes below for a 10% off code. Lucky Bastard does ship Canada-wide, so be sure to kind of hop on that. I know we've still got to get Carson his his gift, his Lucky Bastard prize that he won. I'll be messaging him for sure this week before this episode's out. I promise to get it to him. But yeah, two bottles of I think it was vodka, right? Two sixes?
Yeah, it was. I think it was a regular vodka and then one of their flavored vodkas.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure what else was in there. It was a little package, a little gift package. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we do have a couple of other Lucky Bastard stuff that we will be giving away at some point. So stay tuned. If you're a big vodka person, we are also going to be giving away a 10th anniversary 13 Fishing Freefall.
Yeah.
Reel. Inline reel. So keep your eyes peeled to our social medias and stuff for that. So that's pretty unique. Those are very hard to come by.
Yeah, for sure. I actually just caught a sucker and a couple perch on my Freefall XL reel today. So can say that they work quite well. But I guess we better kind of get to the main attraction here. Part one, this is going to be a two-part episode again because we kind of sat down with Sam Moore longer than we kind of typically do. So but not a bad thing by any means. Tons of information, tons of kind of, I guess, a cool look into kind of the industry of what you're seeing in lots of these advertisements, like the Hummingbird advertisement or something like that. It's kind of cool getting to see the behind the scenes that he kind of puts into there. And then I guess just kind of learning his story. That's going to be mostly this first part here, and then we'll get into some other stuff in the second part. But without further ado, here's part one with Sam Moore.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. We have another exciting episode for you guys. This guy is pretty well known all over the fishing industry. There's probably a lot of brands and products that you fish with every time you head out, where he kind of runs and does a lot of content for these big brands. Yeah, we have Sam Moore. So, Sam, welcome to the show. We appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us. For people that maybe haven't come across you on Instagram or social media, who are you? Kind of give yourself a quick rundown and let the listeners know who you are, what you do, and we move forward from there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It's a hard question, right? Like, hey, sum up who you are in a few sentences. But no, honestly, yeah, I appreciate the invite. I know we've been trying to do this for a while, and I appreciate you guys being patient. So again, we are actually, I think you said it was the first. We're doing this from an ice house, so we are on water. Frozen water. No, thanks for having me on. I mean, I don't know, in terms of who I am, dude, I'm just a guy that likes taking pictures and making cool videos and I don't know, hanging out around people who like fishing and hunting stuff. So there's that's all there is to it. It's nothing yeah. Special.
An expert drone pilot.
I tell people I dabble. That's about all I do. Well, crack may or may not have crashed a couple drones today, actually. It's a little sore subject, but we were trying to do something
today.
Yeah, well, so I mean, I guess I have no problem sharing. So we've done a few, you know, like there's a couple kinds of drones, right? And you guys are probably talking more about the FPV stuff, but there's a couple shots that I've always been wanting to do. One of them being like having like a Ranger parked on the ice and having the windows open and like flying through the windows and then like to a couple guys out there fishing. And so we did that today, and believe it or not, I got on the first rip, which is like not easy to necessarily do. I thought I was gonna for sure hit, because there's wind, there's a crosswind coming. I mean, there's a million things that can go wrong. They're just not that precise of instruments. But we got on the first rip, and so that was great. And then we decided to like around lunch to take it on the main ice road and like do some flips and chase down from really high. And I pushed it a little too far, which is what you do with those kinds of drones. And you know, you're not learning, or you're not really pushing the envelope unless you're pushing it. So I crashed, broke a battery, snapped a GoPro off. I think the frame is good. I haven't started up since, but the nice thing about those drones is you can usually piece them together part by part. It's not like, oh, I gotta send it into like DJI or something like that. Like they're pretty easy to reconstruct. Yeah. So hopefully that's nothing too bad. But honestly, that's why I keep a couple on hand, because you know, you crash them all the time. It's just reality of that world. You have to get used to it. And when you accept the fact that you're gonna crash, especially if you're doing like unique things, it isn't as much of a shock. But yeah, we crashed a few today. A few actually. Yeah.
And when you're saying those drones, right, you're talking about FPV drones for like those that maybe aren't familiar with like the drone categories.
I'm not familiar.
Yeah. So like Logan's looking at like a DJI Mavic Pro or something. So like what exactly is a FPV for like, I mean, I have an idea. I've never flown one, obviously. Yeah. But like kind of what's the difference here?
I mean, geez, you could talk a whole hour and a half about it, but they're just different. You know, you your Mavic, everything from the Phantom series that DJI kind of came out with. Like when people think of drones and the average person will see a drone flying, most people can go to a Best Buy or, you know, any Costco, Walmart and buy a DJI drone, and they're pretty easy to fly. Honestly, like you really don't have to have a lot of training. And a lot of them, you know, they have, you know, obstacle avoidance and GPS, and like, it's almost, when you have all those safety features on, it's almost hard to crash. So those drones have their place. I still have one. I mean, we got one sitting next to me here. Like we still use them, and, they're a vital part of when we shoot content. But, the FPV world started as kind of a bunch of guys building with RC parts, these really fast racing drones. I mean, that's what they were. I think a lot of people have probably scrolled through ESPN like two and seen like these crazy drones flying around. Well, that's where it started. Eventually people were like, well, let's put cameras on them. And then eventually people were like, okay, we got cameras on them. We can do some epic, like, I mean, everything from how fast they can go to where they can go to the acrobatics. Like if you ever see a drone turning or flipping in any kind of a rapid motion or descending or ascending or going through a gap, it's an FPV drone, and that stands for first person view. So you're putting goggles on. You have a camera on the actual drone, and then you have like a GoPro or a small DSLR mounted on top. So you have two cameras going, one to like record what's happening and the other to just see where you're going. So your goggles are on, and it's weird, man. Like we were flying today and you can't really fly like standing up, because your body thinks it's falling because your eyes are seeing your drone, you know, falling from a couple hundred feet. I'm chasing up players down an ice road, and your body's like equilibrium, if that's the right term, like moves to the left, and like you feel like you're falling, but you're not. Your body's not going anywhere. It's just your eyes seeing a motion or a shot moving. So it's goofy, and it's even goofier. Like one of the times we crashed today, I was in the Ranger that we were chasing. So like when your body is like taking a left turn and you feel gravity like pull you to the left, yet your eyes are seeing a picture that's like a couple hundred feet up and doing like a stage dive, like to chase the machine down, it messes you up. It's goofy. It's difficult. I mean, the thing is, these drones started as like hand built RC little things and evolved into so much more. In other words, like even DJI has their own version of an FPV drone. It's just evolved, and it's crazy to see, even from when I first got into it to where it is now, where it's at. It's just grown exponentially. It's crazy.
No, yeah, and like
that's madness.
Yeah, some of the videos that like you have on your social, or you know, some of the stuff you've done for Polaris or what have you, it's actually like incredible, like how fast those drones go. Like I think I've seen one video you posted. I think it was maybe you did it for hummingbird or Minn Kota. For those listening, those are like those are the brands we're talking about. We're talking like hummingbird, Minn Kota, Polaris. I think you've done some stuff for Eskimo, big brands. And I know. Honest to God, though, like I love that stuff. Like I haven't really gotten into the whole camera video photo thing, but like I've been following you for a really long time, and like your content just like makes me like it makes my mind blow. It's unbelievable. But there was one.
I appreciate that. Like you have, it's funny. Like go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say the one video, man. Like you were ripping in your. I don't know if it was you or you were just filming somebody in a boat. But you were going like probably 40, 50 miles an hour. Like you were going fast, or it looked fast, anyways. But and this drone is just cruising along same speed and then flies past the boat. Like it's actually like mind boggling. Like the technology.
So hey, look, grab me the freestyle drone behind you, back right. So there's a couple different kinds of drones, but like. In like genres, and again from the Mavics to even go into the FPV stuff, but like I'll show you. Yeah. So like that drone specifically, I happen to have in my hand right here. The one of the beautiful things about it is like they can go so fast, right? Like you can chase down a boat going like Mach 70. So like this is what you would call a freestyle drone, right? So like everything from if you look at them, they're really basic. They're like there's motors, there's props. There's what's called an ESC and a flight controller, which ESC brings like the voltage to the motors and like tells it how fast to go. And the flight controller allows you to like time all the motors together. There's two antennas, one for video and one for your radio, and a camera to see where you're going. Like there's like eight components to these things. And that's one of the beautiful things. Like this is the one that actually crashed, by the way. So like I broke the GoPro mounts off it, but that'll do like, now again, not like for a minute at a time, but that'll do like 120 miles an hour. They're fast, dude. They're really fast. That allows you to. I'm trying to think if I'm gonna get in trouble for saying this. I don't. So we just shot a production for Polaris in November, and I can't tell you what it's on, or I probably shouldn't say anything about it. But the point was we were able to track down a ranger doing peak speed that you would going out hunting or going down a main road or whatever. Like it was standing still. We got footage of chasing down. I have a buddy in Tampa who's got a Phoenix doing, it's as best it can. It's planed out. It's doing 70 and we're gaining on it. So like, it can't do 120 for very long, but when it bursts, when it goes quick, they're just so fast. And, man, it's like controlling chaos. It's like, let's see what we can do without crashing. And if we get the drone back, it's a win because we didn't crash. And like, we got the footage. That's like the balance of FPV.
Yeah, and then you edit it and it becomes beautiful chaos and everybody just loves it. And
that's the other side. It's unbelievable. Always figuring out how to edit it.
And like I think one of the questions that I kind of wanted to jump into, so like I mean we had Jay Siemens on here, content creator, outdoor fisherman. I think you and him are buddies. But I think it's just like I have to ask this question, like how did you get into the outdoor content space? Like obviously you've always fished, obviously like you found, content creation, but like when did you figure out that you could make a business? Cause you have your own business, More Media. When did it click for you?
It's funny you bring up Jay. I'd be lying, and I've told the story a lot of times. Other people have asked and rather be a podcast or just someone in passing. I went to college in a school and an area that was ridiculously amazing for filming outdoor content. We started making YouTube videos. We started getting behind the GoPros. I mean, we had everything from a Hero 2 to the basic DSLRs and stuff. And after my second year, I declared a major that allowed me to check out some camera gear. That's pretty much the reason I did it. I was able to check out at the time, which was a 5D Mark III, which is a still camera from Canon. But we used the video capabilities in it, and we do like school projects on like, I don't know, some photography project. And then I go take it out like a night of ice fishing after and take some pictures with it. And that was the first time I realized that like I could take some cool pictures with a camera and not just put it on auto, but like really try and get smart about taking some cool unique shots and get the attention of other companies. So 13 Fishing was one of those first companies. Me and a friend, that's what we did. We started taking pictures and got the attention of a few brands, and they'd sent us some gear, and we were on cloud nine, of course, and it was just unreal. And at that point in time, the whole like exchanging a picture for any kinds of goods or like a rod or reel was like, right? And of course, that company was 13. I fell in love with the brand, what they were doing, how they were growing. I mean, you can go on and on and on about, what they were doing in the industry, especially back then. I mean, they were just exploding, right? So I made it kind of the goal through college to continue working on that and continue to get better at the photo and video. And eventually it turned into like, I didn't just like taking pictures. Like it wasn't like, it was almost like, I didn't like doing it just to capture it, but I liked doing it because I enjoyed the actual art behind it. It's an all-encompassing statement, but like, you know what I mean? I actually enjoyed the process of creating that content. So it went from like, I think it's cool because I got a cool picture of myself and my buddies like holding fish to like, I enjoyed the actual technical aspects of capturing a moment. And then by the time I was a junior into senior, I started working with 13 on a project basis. I remember specifically that a lot of the guys that worked for the company had either not finished college or dropped out early to go work for the company. And the owner at the time had a four-year degree from Iowa. And he said, I want you to finish. I want you to finish your 4 years because you and I will be the only ones, for the most part, in the office that have a four-year degree. And that's important. And so I finished my 4 years. And the day I graduated, dude, literally I walked off the stage and had my truck packed and I drove down to Florida. I ended up working for 13 for a number of years. We did some amazing things. I learned a ridiculous amount. I made some friends and connections in the industry that will always be of value to me. My best friend still works for the company, designs, 80-90% of the SKUs that company makes. And he's like I said, my best friend. But eventually I figured out, and where it kind of wraps around Jay is, he needed help shooting a wedding, and it happened to be in Florida. And the funny, it was actually for a Tampa Bay Buccaneers cheerleaders wedding. Dude, it was
that's crazy.
One other story, but like bottom line is most brides and like bridal parties are good at dancing, but you can picture the guy being sat down at a wedding where his like wife and all her best friends are cheerleaders and like they worked him over. Like it was unbelievable. It was ridiculous. Jay just asked me to help. It was like it was the first time I had met Jay in person. It was just one of those things where Jay also shot my wedding. So like, we have known beforehand and I had talked before him, but bringing it back, trying to full circle here, like, Jay told me after that day of shooting, obviously he saw me handle cameras and shoot and all that stuff. He's like, dude, you could do this on your own. And I was already kind of thinking about going that direction, but, to have someone who, especially Jay at that time, he wasn't even really into YouTube yet. He was straight production. Thrive wasn't a thing. It was Jay Siemens. It was just him shooting weddings, shooting outdoor content and stuff. He was shooting nonstop. His wife, Sam, wasn't even in the picture yet. So he was in the thick of it, man. And he's like, dude, you could do this on your own. I've seen it. I know you can. And I'd be lying if I said that didn't give me some confidence into saying, okay, well, maybe I should do this. So I left the company and the job that I thought was going to be my dream job, working for the biggest brand. And it was nothing against them. It was I had some ambitions. I wanted to move home and raise a family. And my wife was from Minnesota. I'm from Minnesota. And I didn't think I'd be able to work from remotely from Minnesota. So I just kind of, took a risk and took out a big loan, bought a bunch of camera gear. And that's how More Media started. But, I don't know. It's ironic how not impressive and or I think average or common my story is. It's not anything crazy unique. I just went for it. And a lot of people hear that and a lot of people say that, but like, I don't know. I don't really know. I didn't really have any confidence that it would be, profitable or I took my wife cause we got married and she moved on to Florida and took my wife moving back to Minnesota. And, we lived at her parents for a few months and bought our first house for like next to nothing. And we just did it, man. Sometimes that's what it comes down to. You just got to at least try.
Yeah. Yeah. Take that leap is the biggest thing is actually, like, it's never going to happen unless you take that first step, right?
I don't know. I said this to Doug Wagner, too. Yeah. I love hearing the success stories, too. Like, right, when somebody just leaves something, you have good money, you have, a secure job, a corporate job, but then you just know that you have a passion for something. And when you take that leap and you see somebody succeed, like, pa- past guests or like yourself, like those stories are just unbelievable. And I mean, I know there's a lot of fishermen, a lot of fishing brands, people that follow you that are pretty happy that you made that leap. So it's pretty cool following you along, seeing all the different projects you get to take on, and all the different kind of perspectives of the fishing industry and down there. Us Canadians, you know, it's nice seeing a nice panfish photo here and there. We don't have crappie or gills here in Saskatchewan, so it's nice to see those nice perfect resolution panfish photos.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said we weren't. I mean, that's what we're doing right now. It's what we're doing today and filming yesterday and today, and I believe the product's already out, but I'll save my ass by not talking about it. But we have a couple new reels that we're shooting content for, and again, we're trying to get as much as we can from random hype videos to fish being caught on them, showing off, you know, what they do, what they're for, the whole product assortment, and that's what we're doing. And it's fun because today I was able to take some time on a few shots using some equipment that I don't typically use on ice. It's usually in studio stuff that I use it for. And we were able to get some really cool stuff. Just things that I know have never really been captured in the ice world. Rather it be FPV flying through that player, so rather it be unique shots with a unique lens that we brought on the ice that you take time to do. It's not just following a guy fishing for the day. It's, hey, we're going to take time to get this specific shot. This is how it's going to look. This is what it looks like in my head. And this is what we're going to go for. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And I know that is content that between myself and Ben, who's does a lot of what I used to do at 13 and has tanked it to the 10th degree and manages pretty much all their marketing department now. It's been a blessing that we've been able to work side by side and do a lot of this stuff together. And I sent him a little Snapchat today of like some of the stuff that we're doing just like out of the back of the camera, and he's losing it, man. He's excited. So anytime you get to you have a relationship with a brand like that where you can text the guy you're working for snippets of what you're working on is a pretty cool deal.
Get your adventure on with JP Adventure Rentals in Saskatchewan. Whether it's remote ice fishing, hunting, trail riding, or just taking family and friends out for a day of fun, JP Adventure Rentals has you covered with brand new ATVs, snowmobiles, aluminum trailers, plus accessories. Visit jpadventurerentals.ca to make your reservation. Check out our sister company, Saskatchewan's Best Boat Rentals, for all of your boat rental needs. Pre-book now. Get out there with JP Adventure Rentals. We rent fun.
So obviously, like, you worked for 13, right? So you have that relationship in your back pocket, and, you know, that's a great company. It's a massive fishing brand. Obviously, they expanded to Canada now. We're fortunate enough to be involved with them as well. Like, it's a great brand. But you've probably been asked a million times, like, how do you secure these other large brand projects? I mean, you work with so many big brands, like, obviously, you know, showcasing, having a portfolio and, you know, the work that you do is unbelievable and obviously just couldn't get recognized. But like, how do those kind of come about? Do you reach out to them? Do they reach out to you? I don't know. It's something that I'm curious about.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. You know, you actually kind of already answered it for me. I had someone recently who was in a position where they're wanting to do something similar to what I do in the industry, whether it be the exact industry or not. But the same question, it was, and it, you know, asking, well, how did you end up working with that brand? The important thing to remember is it didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen into where all of a sudden these people just flock to me and say, hey, we want to work with you. That's just not a thing. If I had to sum it up and trying to go through explain it, it's always trying to be the best in and reinvest in yourself and in what you're doing. There's a lot of people with a lot more talent and a lot of just freaking creative people, which is hard to measure in general, that do what I do all over the country. And I'll say that I'll never be, I don't know if there'll ever be one person, but even in the top 5 or 10, like, I'll pick people who are a heck of a lot more talented than I am at what I'm doing. I think when it comes down to actually trying to get connections and relationships that you can help build on, it's just everything from work ethic to trying to over-deliver on what you're doing. We're at the point now where we're putting together a team of people that's not just me, but, you know, we just made a new hire last week. Yep. And we were going through that conversation. I said the precedence right away. Like, I expect a lot from the people who are going to work on behalf of the brand that we've created and the people we work with. Believe it or not, we don't have a website. I don't have a website for More Media. I've never had one. And I say that because like we've been fortunate enough to not have to have one. I think a lot of people look at like maybe the Under Armour's Polaris 13, like the bigger client kind of things, and say like, wow, that's like crazy. But a lot of people don't necessarily see the other clients you work with and the stepping stones you make to get there. There's a lot of people that, and not that you yeah. don't, we don't just share them. It's just, there's a lot of clients that we're multitasking at the same time, that help pay bills and stuff. And then you go after a brand, Polaris is a good example where, I mean, they're a Fortune 500 company. They're huge. Even with me and my team, and the small agency that we are, we couldn't hope to shoot all the stuff that they need in a given year. It's just not possible. Nor probably even Under Armour, no. Between Hunt and Fish, or whatnot. And it's only when you get into a certain size that I could actually even handle that. So Polaris is a good example of someone in one of their departments followed me from fishing in college and end up working there, and word of mouth, and say, hey, we should talk to this guy. And it ended up being one of those things where like, we should think about working together or something. And it wasn't anything formal. It wasn't anything paid for that matter. But when I have the opportunity to work with a brand like Polaris, the first thing you do is, okay, well, what do I want to do? I mean, obviously, we want to gain their relationship, gain their trust, and then expand on it. So the first year of our relationship was, they sent a unit that I incorporated into a couple different shoots, and I went out of my way to take pictures and stuff that I know that they would probably use, or that may be a gap in what they're posting, and try to provide value that I thought they might not have, or they're paying someone for, right? And, of course, you can't do that all the time. Of course, you can only do that to a certain reason. But at the end of the day, showing that initiative and actually being willing to say, hey, we really want to work with you, like you've mentioned you want to work with us, and proving that is everything. I think a lot of people in this space get under the impression that like, well, you know, I'm $500 to show up. If you want this many steals, it's this many per picture. Like they go on this almost day rate chart they create, and they handcuff themselves because it doesn't allow them to over deliver and show appreciation for a brand they want to work with. And if you can do that and you can gain a company's trust, it only exponentially grows. I mean, my motto is I don't want to give them a reason to have to hire anyone else on a specific project. Now, again, Polaris is big enough where like you can't hope to cover everything, but with their outdoor content, you know, stuff that's specifically using their machines to whether it be ice fishing or hunting, that's absolutely a category that I can handle. And so when it came from just getting some pictures to them and saying, hey, here's what you asked and you wanted 25 pictures, we gave you 50. And here's what we all want to do for next time you want to work with us as well. Showing that precedence that you really want to work with a brand like that gets you that next project. And I was thankful enough. We worked on a project all summer long that I can't quite talk about yet, but it's awesome. I'm looking forward to we're sharing it next year. Involves a couple of the guys they work with in the hunting industry. That was super cool. And then we just did a project again in November that was kind of like the epitome of you guys started here and you over-delivered and you proved that you could be here. And then we gave you a chance at something big. And then we did that. And between you and me, we actually just finalized those assets a day or two ago. And they're ecstatic about it. They're excited about it. I'm excited about it. It's some of the best production that More Media has ever created. Incorporates everything from FPV to what we typically take as edgy content. I mean, we had a hell of a roster with models and people there. We had a bunch of machines that we took our time with it. And we're really excited to once that launches and once that product becomes, you know, once they post it and stuff, that we're very excited to share that we were a part of that. And I think that's just, again, accumulation of showing that you can be there and showing that they can trust you to accomplish things and constantly over delivering. And people that get too fixated on like, well, if I'm going to be there, I need to be compensated for this picture. And it's just they're not looking at tomorrow. They're looking at today. And you got to be able to figure out, you know, what your goal is there. It's a really long explanation, but does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think that's the thing that there you don't see a ton of anymore. You probably see it in a lot of the big tech jobs, but showing up and not instantly expecting that compensation, right? Like actually building something and kind of actually getting the ball rolling instead of just showing up and it's already just become like a employee-employer relation instead of, I guess, more of like a friendship that maybe you want to create, right, with those companies. Like that's totally different than how I think it used to be.
Yeah, and I think people shy away from the idea of it, like you just mentioned. And again, I'm not encouraging people to get taken advantage of or to do everything for free. Like, I'm not saying that, but you got to start somewhere. And if you're confident in your product and what you do, whether it be an influencer, whether it be views on a podcast, whether it be your content you deliver, I mean, whatever it may be, if you're confident in it and you know there's value there, brands will see that, and you just have to work with the right brands and making sure that you lay the foundation to be able to scale to where you want to be is everything. And I think that's if there's something that I think a lot of creatives in my world that whether you're one man shooting or a group of buddies shooting content, like people, you got to be able to look forward. You got to be able to look forward to what's next, not just this paycheck, but what's the next one and where are we going to be in a year? And that's one thing that we've tried to scale. And not only that, but I also think that kind of thing changed. You don't have to have all the answers right off the bat, right? Like, I didn't know I'd be here right now, you know, 2.5 years ago when we started this whole deal. Like, I had no idea. But as it's happened, as it's going, you know, you learn and you adapt and you keep pushing. And I think that's everything. You have to be hungry for it. You have to keep pushing.
Yeah.
No, I think you made a lot of really valid points, because nowadays there's not a lot of people that will go the extra, you know, especially in the corporate world. You know, people just want to clock in and clock out type thing. When you're an entrepreneur, obviously it's a little different too. But obviously when you're trying to get notice as well, just knowing that you have to go that extra mile, put in the work, you might not get compensated for it, but it's a long process. It's not a quick one. So I think those are really, really valid points. Question for you. When you do big projects, like you talked about, like you're super excited about these assets that you know, that are going to be released in the next year or whenever they are, does it just pick at you when you know what they are and you just want the public to see them?
I don't know. I mean, like a little bit, but not as much as you'd think. And the reason I say that is because, we have a folder. It's the best analogy I can think of. We have a folder that we export every finalized still that we deliver to a client. We call it our master folder. Pretty much anything we export out of Lightroom and that goes to a client, we export in this folder. There's, from 2021 alone, probably close to 25 to 30,000 pictures in that folder. And we share 200 on social, you know, more media is social. Obviously those go to a client, but like, there's a lot of stuff that I don't personally get around to sharing that we're doing or being a part of. And you couldn't possibly, because we're doing a lot of different things. And not that we don't want to share that we're working with that brand. It's just there physically isn't enough time. And then if you ever see me not post a lot on my own social or more media, it's probably because we're on back-to-back-to-back shoots. And like, we've been traveling these 2 days and people look at this and say like, oh man, you guys are just going up and fun fishing. Like, I haven't stopped working all day. I fished for a lot, 30 minutes today and was lucky enough to hook into a fish or two. But like, I mean, it was, that doesn't always happen. From this morning to answering emails, I had phone calls to, we were out shooting most of the day. We got back, we cooked dinner. And now I'm here. Like, it doesn't, these are my work days. This is what I do. So like, when there isn't a lot of time between shoots to shoots, like, that's when you see content not being shared and maybe not posted as often, is because we're really busy. So holding on to those assets, there's some shots specifically, like FPV footage. I mean, there's some stuff we got on that Polaris shoot that are like, you know, there's dust following the machine and it's sunrise in the morning and it's like we're whipping around them. It's gorgeous. You understand what I mean? When we'll share it in probably a couple weeks here, but like, those things definitely sit in your mind. But there's just so much stuff that we shoot that we don't end up sharing because there's no time for, that it doesn't necessarily eat at me as much as you might think. I wish there was not only more time for me to put aside to share on social, and now that we have a couple new people in-house that are working for us, that maybe we'll prioritize that and start sharing more of what we do. But there's just a lot of it, man. It's always a juggle to try and figure out, well, what do we post versus what we're actually shooting to, like, oh, hey, this picture was last year, but it was a vice, so maybe we post it for this year. Like, we couldn't possibly share it all. It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's fair. Oh, I mean, even right, we talked a few months back about, you know, having you on the podcast, and it's like, well, man, like, I'm hitting the road for like 10 days. I'm doing these shoots, like, I'm going to be on the road. Like, we'll have to plan it in like 3 weeks. And then 3 weeks comes around, it's like, then, you know, something doesn't line up with us. And then when it does line up for us, then you're back on the road doing shoots, you know, back to back to back, and then, you know, you're busy editing and stuff. So like it's crazy. Like I don't know if people really truly understand like the whole the backside of it, like the whole editing and, you know, handling files and that. Like it's not just going out there snapping mm-hmm. some photos and some videos and going home and putting your feet up, right? There's a whole like post-production
that
takes up a lot of time. So
it's always, and it partially it's my fault as well. Like we always, you know, always make it look like it's, you're goofing off, right? You're fishing. You know, I can post a video of me releasing a bluegill today, and most people would think that, man, he was fishing all day, when it was reality, it was the 30 minutes out of the day that I didn't work. I won't hold anyone against that. I do that myself. It's kind of part of that, but, you're right. Most people don't understand how much, time and effort goes into it. Not only that, but when you, I didn't necessarily think I'd be in a position where I had to start managing people and making sure that, you know, they're doing what they need to be doing, and those responsibilities are taken care of. And as we continue to grow, just making sure this whole machine is running is as much my responsibility as well. And then with, when we had Line, it was, you know, that's a whole other business that, you know, takes another part of your day and part of your time. And like, it's just one of those things, man, that, very few people know exactly how long it takes to, or how much effort it puts into, but like, I'm not holding that against anyone. I don't blame them. Cause I share very little of it on social. And usually when I shared it, it's me goofing off and having fun for 30 minutes, but it's always a lot of work. But, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I obviously have chosen this run. I'm not complaining one bit. I'll never complain about it. I might complain about it in a certain instance, but in terms of all encompassing, I mean, I chose to go this route, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. Not at all.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed part one with Sam Moore there. Pretty neat that he's our first guest that's actually been out in an ice cabin while recording with us, and surprisingly, the technology seemed to have worked pretty good. He was off his buddy's hotspot on his laptop. And then big thanks also to the boys who were keeping it quiet in the background. I know that I think there's like, what, four other guys in there or something?
Yeah, there was like four or five of them. And they were in Sam's ice house, which was pretty, pretty stellar. We're going to post a picture up. Sam has a picture on there. He's got that aqua traction flooring there. And it looks sick. So, we appreciate him tuning in, especially from his ice house. So, it was a great episode. Fantastic. Get an inside look of somebody that works with these huge brands in the industry. And, brands like 13 Fishing, which, I mean, we need to mention they're a presenting sponsor. If you're looking for some gear for late ice here or getting ready for spring, go check out 13. Okay. Go check out 13fishing.ca. Actually, never mind. Don't just check out 13fishing.ca. Ooh. You can go check out Rapella.ca because we have some big news. Like, we've been working our butts off. We want to make sure that you people that are tuning in, listening to the podcast, following us on social media, have access to all the brands, all the products that you love and enjoy using. And we've actually talked to Rapella Canada, which 13 Fishing Canada is under. And we've extended our 15% off Weekend Warriors discount code to all 9 brands under Rapella's umbrella. Yeah. So it's pretty unreal. So you can head on over to Rapella.ca. You know, you can add some jigging wraps, the new Shadow jigging wrap. If you want, if you're looking for an ice auger, you can go add a 40 volt Pro Light into your cart and
save the taxes.
Use our code Weekend Warriors at checkout and get 15% off your entire cart. 9 fantastic brands. Go check it out. The link will be below.
And I guess something to tie, it's kind of funny, I just put this together, but to tie all of this together, so the burbot today, or I guess that we were talking about in this episode, was caught on the Omen 13 Fishing. Omen.
Yeah.
On
36 medium?
I think it's a medium heavy.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm going to be using that for lake trout, hopefully. But was using that rod. And then the hook I was using, it was pretty simple, but it was a VMC jig. I can't remember the name of it for the life of me right now, but it's just a jig. So that's one of the brands you'd be able to get 15% off. And then yep. kind of to tie it into this episode is I was using, because it will be used for lake trout, I was using 40-pound braid from Fishing Line Company.
Suffix.
Nope. Oh. From Fishing Line, which Sam used to own. So thought that there was kind of funny to kind of tie that all in. Pretty cool and very, very simple presentation. Literally just a jig. VMC has some of the strongest hooks out there. Love their hooks. Have been using them for a long time. So yeah, simple presentation, piece of Cisco on there, and you're good to go.
Yeah, burbot are simple fish. You don't need to get too, you know, extraordinary yep. with them. You just slap on a little bit of meat onto a hook, set it on bottom, pound bottom a little bit, and they'll come in and they'll sniff it out. They actually have exterior taste receptors. I was actually talking to James over at the Sass Wildlife Federation, because for the life of me, I couldn't figure out what they were called. I was calling them external taste buds, which, I mean, I guess is a proper term. But James was like, yes, they are external taste receptors. And I was like, okay. Yeah. But yeah, so like they can come in and they're going to actually be able to taste that bait before they even put it in their mouth. Yeah. So pretty neat. Yeah, if you're into burbot fishing, go follow us on social media. We both love to burbot fish. We'll be posting lots on the podcast social media too.
Yeah. Well, it's so nice. You can literally, if you're busy during the day, it's a Saturday, you could literally have supper, or maybe an early supper, like a senior supper, 3:30, 4 o'clock kind of thing. Right. And then get out to Deef. It's an hour for me, hour and a half for you kind of thing. Hour 45, get out there and you're setting up just before sundown and you can fish till 11, 12 at night. Whenever your heart desires, and you don't use up your day if you're busy during the day, right? So definitely going to be something that I'll be hitting up a couple more times at least. But it's all about location. If a fish comes in, it's probably going to bite. I don't know if I've marked the burb. Well, lots of times you don't even mark them because they're in the dead zone, but I don't know if I've marked a burb that hasn't bit or tried
to. So much fun. Honest, yeah. So much fun. But anyways, thank you so much for tuning in. This was part one with Sam Moore. Stay tuned. Part two will be coming out soon.
Thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your favorite listening platform so we can reach more anglers just like you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for media updates and behind-the-scenes content.